Hello and welcome to another episode of Hearing in Colour with Matt Simon. I'm pleased to announce my new guitar app, Guitar Secrets, is available on the Apple Store and the Google Play Store. There's some free lessons on there, and check out more information at mattsimonguitar.com. Today I'm going to talk about my first experiences on a cruise ship. This was just the first cruise ship, and this was a three-month contract. This was with Saga Cruises, and that is, if you're not in the UK, it's a company that deals with primarily older passengers. Now, often the passengers on cruise ships can be a little bit older, but Saga is strictly 50 plus, and on this cruise ship, the average age, that's the average, was 83. So it was a bit different to some other cruise ships, but at the time it was my first one, so I had nothing to compare it to. And it was pretty crazy. And I'm not saying like, oh, it was a bit crazy when I was on a cruise ship, but compared to what other people said happened on the first one and then subsequent contracts, this really was a bit of a zoo, a bit of an asylum on water. So we started off, we had to have some safety training because it was the STCW certificate, which is the safety training, I'm going to have to cut this in, standards of safety trace core watchmanship. I'm going to cut that one in. So basically the band was put together by an agent who by all accounts didn't audition people that well. I was the bass player and I couldn't send an audition video through because I was working on a ferry at the time and I didn't have a bass with me. So the agent just said, yeah, that's fine. I assume the saxophone player, Nick, he auditioned properly. And the keyboard player, who was the MD, which is musical director, that's the band leader, he auditioned with the drummer. And apparently it was a bit of a joke audition there. They played a bit of Beatles, played a couple of things, but didn't really do anything professionally, like didn't get put through the paces. So the MD was not great, not the best band leader, and definitely not the best piano player. He's basically a cocktail pianist who was blagging it, and we had to play lots of different styles of music, and he wasn't really up to that. The drummer was an absolute nightmare. When we did our safety training, some other musicians, there was a group of nine of us, I think, in the hotel, and a trumpet player said, yeah, that guy's a Fruit Loop. Just, yeah, watch out for that one. And at the time we thought, he seems quite friendly. Seems all right, but he was an absolute nut job. So we got on board, and the first thing we did was basically a lot of photocopying. There was a four-piece band, so there was trumpet, bass, drums, and keyboards, or piano. And we had two main jobs. There was to play on our own, which was either for ballroom sets, like ballroom dancing before and after the main show, and sometimes out on deck we do some like lunchtime music or afternoon cocktail music. Then the other job was to be the backing band for the guest artist. So it could be an opera singer, a violin player, classical guitarist. They'd come on board, they'd have music written out for the band, which we'd then read, we'd rehearse quickly for their main show, and then play that in the evening. And most cruise ships, they're quite big, so they have first and second, even sometimes third sittings of the main show. But this was just a one show, very small ship, so one show per night. So we do ballroom dancing from 8:30 till 9:15. The main show would be about 9:30 till 10, and then 10:30, then 10:30 till 11:15 was officially when the evening's entertainment finished. But most people went to bed by 10:45, so that was great. It was an early finish, and then we could go down to the crew bar, which was always nice. So the agent told us, yeah, when you get on board, there'll be lots of music written out. There's these whole packs of music, and so you better pick them up. So you want to play lots of waltzes, tangos, all these kind of things. There'll be lots of music written there for you, so don't worry about it. But we got on board and to find that there was just shreds of paper. There's a few bits and bobs lying around because the agent we were hired through had pushed out someone in the main office, like someone's wife knew someone. And so there's a lot of ill will towards us as a band, even though we'd never met anyone there. So everything was a mess, and we spent about the first 3 weeks just photocopying. We tried to work through the music they'd given us, but there wasn't much there. So we ended up using what's called a real book, and in jazz it's a book, and it's got a lot of jazz standards like Fly Me to the Moon, Have You Met Miss Jones, these kind of things, and it had the melody line written out and then just the chords over the top, so you can give that to any band member. So the bass player or keyboard player, they can read the chords, and then the trumpet player or brass could play in the lead, and the keyboard player could take a lead. Then the drummer could just use it to see what the structure of the song is. Is it 16 bars or is it like 8 bars in this section? So we can all read off the same sheet, which is fine. And we just spent ages photocopying reams and reams of that, to the point where we got tired of it, but our drummer got especially frustrated. And he just couldn't handle it. We just spent a lot of time doing it, and he got so frustrated he actually shouted at the receptionist. We could see he was getting really stressed and in a rehearsal, and he just put down a stick something. He goes, "I'm so stressed, I can't think." And then we said, "Right, what is it?" He goes, "Oh, it's all this photocopying." He's like, "Okay, we'll just cut the rehearsal short, go up to the office together, and we'll just do it as a band." I'm like, that's a bit weird. And he was there just shouting at the receptionist, "Can someone show me how to use the fucking photocopier? Because I'm not a fucking scientist." So that was nice. And he was constantly trying to sabotage the band because he wanted the MD job, the band leader job, and thought the piano player wasn't up to it. It turns out he wasn't, but he would do what he could to make things difficult in the hopes of really rocking the boat, no pun intended, to the point where they get someone else in. And he would do very strange things in his effort to sabotage the band, sometimes for... he only did this once, but for a count-in, so the drummer will count 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the band comes in. And this is obviously completely silent because no one else is playing. And this was on a posh cruise ship. In total silence, he shouted out, 1, 4, 4! Dun, 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 dun. It was just ridiculous. He had many issues. He was a troubled man. For his troubles, we called him Gollum. As angry little bald man, but maybe Goblin would have been better. But we stuck with Gollum. Not to his face, though. He would have gone mental. He told us he was into MMA, which was mixed meditative arts. He'd stand in the gym, fists balled out like by his side, like imagine a cowboy ready to do a duel, but like hands and fists. He'd stand there, face down, face up, face down, and he'd wear a bandana while he did that. And he was just such a weird guy. We're in Cyprus on a stop, and just in a cafe having a drink, and he was just going on a ranting about the difference between butter and margarine as if it really mattered. And as we're walking back, there was a sign that said keep off the grass, and being a rebel, I walked on the grass. I said, "Get off the grass, get off the grass, someone spent a lot of time and effort just making that noise, get off the grass." Like, okay, right, we think he was gay, bit of a closet case, but nobody cared. Why would it matter to us? The only thing that mattered was just, can he play drums? No, he's quite stiff. And he was quite an angry little man. He'd be very angry. Some of the singers and dancers were a little bit scared of him. So in rehearsal, sometimes they'd be hiding around the other side of the piano, like almost visibly shaking. So that was fun. The best thing, though, that was he was obsessed with his arse and going for a shit. I don't know where this came from. But one problem was, and this is not uncommon in some older or packed cruise ships, is you might have a shared bathroom between two cabins. So you'd have two bunks in one cabin on the left, two bunks in one cabin on the right, and in between is a bathroom. And that will be joined by two doors, like one on each side, and they can be locked from both sides. And the problem was that occasionally someone would forget to unlock his side, because if you're going for shit, probably don't want people to walk in. Piss will be fine, having a shit, yeah, lock both of them, and then on your way out, unlock both of them. Otherwise, your bandmates can't access the bathroom. And this happened a couple of times, and it made him really angry, because for some reason, when he needed a shit, he needed to go. Sometimes he confront us about it. Like, what if I've only got 5 minutes between appointments? You know, I need to go to the shit, like, what am I going to do? What appointments have you got? And he was... the worst one, we had, I can't remember the person's name, but it was a BBC journalist who'd done some war corresponding in Iraq and Afghanistan, and quite a big career. And Nick, our saxophone player, was a journalism student, so he said, "Oh great, I'll go and watch the lecture." And the general rule of thumb was you weren't really allowed to take part in any of the passenger activities, but if there was space at the back and you're quiet, especially for a lecture, just stand there, shut up, and it's fine. So Nick was watching this lecture, and unbeknown to us, the toilet door had not been unlocked from his side, so stormed up into the passenger area. And bearing in mind, this is very posh and polite, so it should have been like, "Nick, can you just come over? You've locked it again, really." But no, didn't do that, no subtlety, absolutely stormed into the lecture theatre to the point where the whole thing stopped to watch him turn around. "Nick, what are you doing? You've locked the fucking toilet again. What am I supposed to do if I need a fucking shit? Unlock the fucking door." Just stormed out. Absolutely mental. This produced a few more problems. His solution was he would just literally rip the locks and the door handles off the inside of the bathroom so he wouldn't be denied access to the throne. These were replaced twice, I think it was, by the hard-working maintenance crew on board, and then after the third time they came up with this genius pirate tech solution. So what they did was they attached a rope from one of the doors, and then at the other end of the rope was a hook into a loop on the other door. So if you imagine the toilet, and on the left and the right there's doors, so on the left door there's the rope coming over to the right door with a hook in it. So as you enter the bathroom, you hook the rope across the bathroom, and then neither door can open. But then for you to get out, you have to unlock it and take the hook out of the loop, and then both doors are unlocked. It's amazing. But we were the only bathroom in the fleet that had a rope over the toilet, and word got round, people would come around, oh, can I come and see rope? Like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. What the fuck? The atmosphere on board was very well to do, a bit snooty, and there's, depending on your rank on board, there's certain privileges you have and certain privileges you don't have, and this is usually just, you just know what they are, or people will tell you. But we had a piece of paper on the wall that was the privilege matrix. So if you're a 2-star officer or 3-stripe officer, then you could do these certain things. Our band leader was 2.5, I think we were 1.5, so we were allowed to walk around the ship wearing sort of a day uniform, which is a dark polo shirt and trousers and a name badge, and then we could use the bars as long as we're not taking up too much space, and if it ever gets too busy you're expected to leave. That's fine, but just the whole atmosphere of like, you're not good enough for this, you just, you peasants, go back downstairs. And because we were white, essentially, we were allowed to do a few things, and the photography staff were, but then the general crew, generally Asian, like Filipino, Thai, Indian, they were not allowed to do anything. Just like finish your shift and then go, which I get that, because if you work at a hotel, you don't necessarily want to see all the hotel staff in the hotel bar or the restaurant when you're working there, but there was definitely what felt like a sort of a white-brown divide. The crew mess, the crew food was, it was a mess, it was horrible. There was, wouldn't want to eat in there. And then we were allowed officer status, so it was a much smaller, posher little place. And they had alcoholic smoothies twice a day. There was alcoholic smoothies for lunch and for dinner. So we'd often get up around 10:30. I mean, we wouldn't finish work till 11, which is not even that late, but we didn't have to be up till 9 a.m. So get up a bit later in the morning, go to the gym, and then we'd catch the start of lunch as breakfast. And yeah, I mean, we're basically like on holiday ish you're working, but we're only working like 3 hours a day. And all the smoothies were different. So, oh, what is it today? Oh, mango and triple sec, or watermelon and vodka. And I spoke to the head chef, the executive chef, and I said, are you just making these up? It was all up Bailey's and banana or whatever. And eventually admitted, like, yeah, just make them up. But yeah, just serving free alcohol twice a day. So that's pretty funny. The food was very good for us, though. I mean, we had steak and lots of nice food there. But yeah, for other members of the crew, the food was not very good. Yeah, so we met some characters on board, and by characters, I mean
fucking assholes.
One of those was Steve, the safety officer. There was a few hundred people on board as a crew, and nobody liked him. He had one friend, which is a girl who worked in the spa, and then he just pissed her off, and then he had literally no friends. Can you imagine someone in maybe your school, like, surely everyone had at least one friend, but this guy, just nobody liked him. He bullied us to start with because we didn't really know what was going on, didn't really know the rules, but then we pushed back after a while, and then we just we were nice to him, which he didn't really know how to deal with that. There was karaoke night in the crew bar one night, and Nick brought a saxophone down. We did play the funky music, and he was just ripping it, and they said, oh, you guys are actually quite good at what you do. Like, well, yeah. And then we bought him a beer, and he just didn't know what to do with that. So although I had to shout at him in Africa. We were quad biking in the Namibian desert, which is cool, and there wasn't a proper helmet for me. There wasn't any left in the right size, so they wanted to give me this pink one. He's like, oh yeah, you're just going to put that on, put it on, put the pink helmet on. And it's just like, no, you don't have any authority out here. We're not on the ship, you know, we're not home. Like, what are you doing? We're just out in the desert, so fuck off. What a dick. The cruise director, so essentially the director of entertainment and in charge of some other things on board, John, yeah, he was a real closet case. Again, nobody cared, but that was a bit of a bugbear for him. And then when his dad came on board, who used to be in TV, just like really nice guy, really chilled out, really cool, really likable. And you could see that it was clearly in his father's shadow. And his Oh God, some real issues. He really drank a lot. I mean, like lots of people, including us, drank a lot on board, but he'd have a brandy and coke and you could smell it from across the room. That's how strong it was. And oh God, that time we got raided by the police. Was that in Cyprus? I was in the gym, I think, and I was just having some lunch, and Nick, my cabin mate, came up to see me and he was just looking white in the face, like, "Matt, you've got to come down to the cabin. You have to come now." Like, okay. And he looked really, really worried. So came down and there's these two guys with guns and like tasers on the belts, like just going through all of our stuff in the cabin. And I hadn't finished some protein powder that I was using before I came on board, so I thought, well, might as well take it with me, I can use it. Just making drinks after going to the gym. And it was in a margarine tub. And there's so they got it out of like one of the drawers and like, "What is this?" Like, it's protein powder, because they thought it was heroin or something. I was like, "It's a margarine tub full of heroin. How much do you think we're earning that, or have we smuggled it from somewhere?" I'm like, "Try it. It's strawberry flavored." And they were really angry. So Nick was scared, but I saw the funny side of it at the time. Although we then got hauled into the entertainment office because we weren't allowed spirits in our cabin. We had to have a few beer cans from the crew shop, but we'd had some whiskey, and that was in the sink. So they had a go at us for that. So they hauled us up to the office, and the guy's got a bottle of sherry on his desk. He says, "Oh, well, you can't really have alcohol in your cabin." Like, "But what, on your desk is fine." So yeah, that was fun. The assistant entertainment manager, she was older lady. She's quite nice. I got on with her. Both of them were drinking from like 11 a.m., like pretty much every day. But yeah, she was nice to us. Always nice to her. It was fine, but. God, that was some weird people on board. Oh God, the sound man, Jonathan. He was the worst sound man I've ever worked with. I mean, I've met some shockers across the board. Like they're just not trained, or they used to work in laundry, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you want to do sound? Yeah, you can do sound. It'd be fine. It's just pressing a few buttons." And oh my God, there was a string quartet on board, and they'd done two performances already when we were speaking to them. So they were, "Well, who's the sound guy on board?" I'm like, "It's Jonathan. Have you not met him? You've played twice." I'm like, no, he didn't do the sound. So what did he do? Well, he'd set up four chairs for us in the main area, and then four music stands. He'd point one mic towards just the arch of the chairs, and then he had another mic to the side in case we wanted to talk. Well, but he didn't check into the sound levels. No. It was so bad to the point where, and it's a small ship, so sometimes the artists we're working with would say, "Where's your sound guy?" Like, "I don't know." And it's in the middle of a rehearsal. This horrendous violin player from Russia, Hannah something, and yeah. So we're in the booth. "Okay, the backing CD. Can you turn it up a bit?" And like, no response. "Can you turn up the CD a bit?" So we went into the booth, and he's just not there. So went down to his cabin. We thought maybe he's doing some sound out on deck. There's an afternoon thing. Nothing. Just completely vanished. Couldn't find him. And he basically, in the middle of a sound check where we're sound checking with another musician and we've got to run through the whole show, he'd somehow just thought, "Yeah, that's fine." And then just fucked off. Couldn't be asked. But he then topped that performance with an absolute killer. This I'll remember for the rest of my life. So we're playing through the show, and this violin player was just really bad. She claimed that she was, she's all that, but then she played along to a CD of herself, like didn't have a backing track, so just a CD of her playing with an orchestra, and she was out of time and out of tune with herself. That was great. And in the middle of one of her shows, what she would do is she'd play some music and then go off, get changed into a ballroom dress, and then come back. And meanwhile, there's a video playing for about a minute saying, "The power of tango," all this kind of stuff. So, "Oh, the mysterious passion of the tango, here's what it is." And so she had a head mic on, like you see dancers have, which is by the mouth. So she was talking and playing, and then she'd go backstage, the plan was, and then take off a dress, put on a new one, and then get back on stage. What Jonathan the genius did not do is he did not mute the mic, so he did not turn a mic off. So not only did he hear, she goes off stage, and you can just hear her getting changed, but the show wasn't going too well, and you can hear her go, "Fucking bunch of fucking assholes," having the audience in stitches. We're like, "What the fuck?" She's just like ripping the piss out of everyone, and then comes back on stage, not knowing this, strikes up a pose, and I was like, "Wow, this is bad," because it was even worse than that. Just before she, just as she went off stage, the there's supposed to be a projector screen come down, and this took 30 seconds, like a really old knackered garage door. And so she went off stage, and then Jonathan pressed the button for screen down. Nothing else was going on. So I said to him after, well, why didn't you time it? I was like, yeah, I did. He said, it takes 30 seconds to come down. Well, why didn't you start that 30 seconds before it's needed? And he said, well, I don't really know. Her show was hit by the piano player's inability to play a lot of the music as well. So she'd had a fairly coherent structure of music she wanted to play, but then our piano player just couldn't play some of them, so she had to chuck them out and rearrange the set, which was... oh, it was bad. I mean, there was Schindler's List was next to the Flintstones. So, and now, from something that makes you cry to something that makes you laugh. And some of them, it wasn't even arrangements. It was what's called walk-on music. So it could be 10 seconds of... just little bits like that. And some of these were like The Simpsons, or there was Flintstones, Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. And she was using those as little songs. I know they're intro music, so it's not that. And she played Smoke on the Water. And she had Nick play the saxophone along with the violin, but it was so bad. It was out of tune. And we joked about Gollum, because what was he up to? Like, maybe he's having what we call like a strangle wank. So in America, that's jerking it. So it was called a strank. And it sounded like a donkey having a strank, having the saxophone and the violin both out of tune with each other. Absolutely horrendous. We played out on deck as well. It was a long cruise down to the bottom of Africa, and we had lots of sea days. So either you have a port day, is where the ship docks in port for the afternoon. You'll get in maybe 7 a.m. and then leave about 4 or 5 p.m. Or you have a day which is completely at sea, which is called a sea day. So we'd had a lot of sea days and people are getting a little bit bored. So the entertainment director decided, I want to have the show, the production show, outside. So the Sings and Dancers are going to do that. We'll move the band outside. And this was salty air and warm summer. And it was, there was some electrical issues. Something wasn't grounded. There was just a little tingle on the bass strings and some of the microphones. So, but like, show had to go on. So the singers, they had their microphones covered in a paper napkin and they were holding it quite far away just to make sure they didn't get a little zap on the on the lips. And then now I just flat refuse to play. It's just not safe. But so, oh, how can I get around this? And I had some rubber catering gloves on, a double layered, and then I played those and I shredded through one of them. And some of the guest musicians said, oh, why are you playing rubber gloves? Oh yeah, because we kind of got a bit electrocuted on stage, which looking back is ridiculous. Then there was reports and medical things. The piano player went down to the medical bay and tried to get himself signed off, but it wasn't really that serious. And then Safety Steve came up and interviewed and everyone, and I wasn't aware enough of how the politics work, because I said, do you want to just then give a statement? Like, yeah, can you just sign that? Like, yeah, I guess. Our drummer was a bit more wise to the world, so he gave some information but didn't want to sign anything. So there was a signed statement from me saying we're getting electrocuted on stage. And the entertainment director came down pretty hard on me for that. He wanted to vent, but it was his fault, really. He just, oh, should this has to go on? But there was a difference between, oh no, you weren't electrocuted, it was an electric shock. It's still not good if you're getting little zaps off your equipment. So yeah, fun memories. And Nick caught himself out, because we still had to do a pre-show ballroom set even though nobody was out there dancing, so it was really windy. And he had all his music on a music stand. It hadn't really clipped it all in. It was lots of loose sheets of paper. And he was playing a solo, and a gust of wind blew all his stuff across the deck, and he just went, fuck! In front of everyone, which was pretty funny. Gollum got fired after that. So we were doing... it was a three-month contract, and the first trip was 3 weeks. That was around the Mediterranean. And after 2 weeks, we thought, we just can't deal with this. Musicians can be a little bit weird, but, you know, what do you do? But this is just beyond what is normal. So we went to the entertainment director, said, look, got this guy, and we just don't think he's fit to work here. And really? And yeah, he's a bit weird. So, okay, well, come back to me, write down on a piece of paper what he's been doing for the last 2 weeks, and we'll take it from there. And in that time, we just filled two A4 sides of what had gone on. Like, oh my God, right, yeah, he is a bit crazy. But we couldn't tell him that he was being replaced, otherwise he'd have got even worse. So, and this is harsh, so after 3 weeks we docked in Southampton, which was our home port, and he'd gone off to a supermarket to buy some bits and bobs, and they'd called him and said, can you come back to the ship? Okay. And then they're just like, right, get the fuck out, we're not dealing with this anymore. So a bit of a shock for him, which was harsh. And then we were in our cabin and we could hear, like, he was packing his stuff up, and then Nick went out and then heard this knock at the door. I'm like, oh shit, because we hadn't confronted him about this. And then he came in, he's like, looked around the cabin and said, where's the other arsehole? Meaning Nick. And I said, photocopying, which is true. And he said, well, you can both burn in hell then. And just strolled off. Obviously, he'd have been a bit pissed off then. Then we checked the cabin he'd been in, and under his bed there were some drawers, and we pulled them out, and it was lots of packets of hot chocolate and a book saying how to play drums. Years later, it turns out I just missed working with him again by 3 days. I was called in last minute to replace someone, and there's, yeah, this guy left, he's an absolute nightmare. And it turns out it was the same guy, this drummer, not a good drummer as well, and he'd just done really weird things like sleeping in the corridor and just being an arse to everyone. And the sax player who's sharing a cabin with him said, yeah, he did some really weird things. Like, it was late at night and in the cabin, so this guy went and he turned on the TV, turned on the shower, turned on the lights, because he knew I was trying to sleep. But I'm up late anyway, so it's not really an issue. I was just reading a book. And it's just like he was trying to piss me off. And then he put his arse next to the curtains over my bed and just farted. And I had to turn over the curtains and just say, look, no, this is not right. You can't do this. So he's talking to a child or someone a bit special. It's very weird. So after that, our drum replacement was Big Dave, and he was a really cool guy. He was a very round gentleman. I don't think you'd mind me saying that, because he was very round. So we had to get a last-minute replacement in, and it's a few days before Christmas. So he'd done some cruise work before and said to the agent, look, I need passenger status in the passenger cabin, because he'd been on cruise ships before. And they're so desperate, said, like, yeah, that's fine. And also, he's quite round, so I don't think he would have passed the medical, and he would have struggled to get through some of the doors in the crew cabins. And I'm not joking, like, he was very round. But really fun guy to be around. He'd eat lots, and the food's all free, and it's quite good quality on that ship. So, you know, like, lunch, second lunch, breakfast, and, like, just multiple courses throughout the day, and he'd have a little cheeky twinkle in his eye, like, I better not have any more cheese in case I get fat. He was massive, but really funny. We're sound checking, and he let out this enormous fart. It sounded like someone ripping a carpet apart and just like stopped everything dead. And he turned around and said, how'd you like that sound check, guys? Just mad. He broke his bed as well, which was amazing. And we're chatting to the chief engineer about this in the crew bar. And he said that, yeah, in 30, 35 years at sea, he'd never heard anything about that. Anything like that. It's just, so what happened? So, well, and he told us, because the beds sometimes are quite substantial bunk beds, but in the passenger cabin, the one he had, it's more like a camping bed. And what happened is, in the middle of the night, just the two legs away from the wall had collapsed and just rolled him out onto the carpet. So he woke up and like, well, what are you doing? He said, well, just like, you know, swam back to bed. And he fell out of bed another time as well, because he'd our piano player had come around to drop some music off for later on that day, and knocked on the door. Yeah, come in, door's open. And said, oh great, can you help me up? I'm down. And so, well, how long had he been there for? And he said, like, about an hour and a half. So yeah, right, just give me a hand, yep, prop your leg against that bed, yep, pull me up. It's mad. Like, that's quite big. The cruise director, who is the closet case asshole, would apparently sometimes phone up the piano player and say, yes, did your drummer get off the ship today? Yes, he did. Does that mean we can take on more water then?
What a dick.
Dave was an excellent player though, and we really enjoyed working with him. So after that, we had Steve, and Steve was a joy to work with as well. He really funny guy, excellent player, and he had a laugh like a bomb going off, and he'd do these pranks on people. It doesn't really work over a podcast, but he'd phone someone up and then just pull a face, put the phone down, which they can't hear, but you phone up anyone like, hello, is that laundry? Like, yes, click. And then he just He'd even phone up the deputy captain. Hi, is that deputy captain? Yes. Click. We phoned him up as well just to play a prank on him. So we called him. Hi, is that Steve, the drummer from the band? Yes. Click. And then he'd laugh. We could just hear him laughing through the walls. Ah! He'd tell us funny things like he was in the mess and there was some cake and he decided, oh, I really like the marzipan. So he just cut all the marzipan off the cake. Just ate that and left the rest of the cake. I think it was a roll on the plate, but it still was labelled marzipan cake. So some girls from reception came in, but oh, there's a cake, but it says marzipan cake, but there's no marzipan on it. And they were quite confused. And they said, that's because the drummer ate it all. We were sailing around the west coast of Africa, so it was quite hot and sunny, and he'd like to go sunbathing, but would never wear sunblock. Except, nah, I don't need it. But Steve, it's quite hot. We're crossing the equator. That'll be fine. And his face was really peeling, so one of the other staff said, Steve, it looks like you've got AIDS. Wow, that's right. This was early 2014, and he was new to smartphones, and someone had introduced him to Angry Birds, the game, which he really liked, and he'd be laughing his ass off to the point where some people the other side of the corridor thought there was a party going on, just because there's so much noise, and it's just Steve playing Angry Birds. So they knock at the door, hello? We thought there was a party going on here. And it's just Steve, like, yelling at Angry Birds in his pants while the other keyboard players just standing there posing in a suit looking at the mirror. I'm like, we're going to go now, guys. Bye. So our new keys player, I won't name him, he's a really nice guy, like, way better than our previous guys. Oh, wow, this is how the songs can sound. And some of the production shows we played for, like, oh, I didn't realise there was a keyboard part because the other guy just played it so quietly just to avoid being heard. He was a cool guy, drank a lot, as did a lot of people, but at this stage, didn't interfere with his work. I heard from some other people who worked with him later on that it did, and he got sacked from that. But yeah, touring and playing ships, it's, you know, you're away from home a lot, nobody's driving, so you can drink a lot because there's a lot of downtime. Like for us, it could be if we weren't playing until the evening, then we might have rehearsed at 5:30 for an hour, or if it was a show we'd done before, then we really need to rehearse or just quickly run through it, and then we play for a couple of hours and then we're done. So the bulk of the day is yours, so you can do what you want. And some people drink a lot. I like to go to the gym quite a bit, but you can drink a lot. It's very easy to fall into that, and just boredom kicks in because you're doing some very similar things a lot. So people just, yeah, fall into that pattern of just drinking a lot. And I spoke to him and he didn't seem to eat much. I said, oh, what's your daily diet like, or daily structure? He said, well, get up, have a cigarette and a coffee, then lunch should be a cigarette and an antacid tablet, maybe a couple of halves of lager, and then later on a bit of lager, some whiskey maybe, and then cigarette, and then bottle of wine. Wow, that's bad. And one of the girls from the spa said to us, I saw your man there, he was eating like he hadn't eaten for days. And it turns out that he would eat once every 3 days, not three times a day like a lot of people. And this is weird because when you're at sea, your food is free, and on land you have to pay for it like everyone else at the supermarket. But he would generally only eat when he had to pay for it. Very strange. Lovely guy though. I've been around Europe a little bit on some family holidays, but I really got to travel with work. So on the ferries I went to Rotterdam in the Netherlands and Zeebrugge, which is very close to Bruges or Brugge. Excellent beer and chocolate there. But on a cruise ship, it's a different place every day, and it was crazy. Like Nick and I would be on deck sometimes, like, oh, this is nuts. We're traveling for work. We're getting paid for this. Like, we'll wake up in France, and then next day we'll wake up in Spain. It's mad. So the first cruise we did was around the Med, which was awesome. And then the next cruise was down to South Africa and back, which is crazy. And this was with Saga. So again, the average age was 83 on that cruise, which is, some of these places wouldn't be as safe for families or younger people. One of the stops we went to was Sierra Leone. The port's called Freetown. I wasn't allowed off the ship that day, but the rest of the band did. And there was an opera singer on board who was 6'7". So lovely guy, but quite imposing physically, should you need to be walking around somewhere a little unsavoury. And they said they got off the ship, walked around a bit, and there was just some guy with a stick following them. And he followed them a bit more, and they got nervous and just came back on board. So, Sierra Leone, is that a good place to take pensioners? It's that's odd. Went to Namibia. There was a place called Wolf Bay. We did some quad bike in the desert, and that was awesome. Although health and safety there was just non-existent. We were given safety helmets, but they just said, like, yeah, just don't go too fast, or it'd be fine. But most of the groups that went, usually somebody got injured. And the group before us, someone had gone to a hospital with a broken arm. And the thing is, if you get injured working on a cruise ship on shore, that's classified as a self-inflicted injury. It's basically something that could be very easily avoided. Or pregnancy, sunstroke, being drunk, these could be just very, very easily avoided. So you're putting it on yourself. And if you are self-incapacitated, then it's your expense to get replacement because it's your fault that it happened. If you need to be flown home because of any of these injuries, then it's at your expense. If you get sick or injured on board, then they'll fly you home, cover the expenses, and that's fine. But if you get fired or something that you did to cause yourself to be unable to work, then you have to pay your expenses back. And there was, I think it was a night receptionist. She came off a quad bike and strained her wrist, and if she wasn't able to work, she'd have had to wait in a hospital and then at her expense fly herself home and fly out her replacement. So she was very, very nervous and not sure about being stuck in an African hospital on your own. But fortunately, she was okay to work. So that was okay, but it gave everything a little bit extra element of danger. But it was a really cool day. Had a long sleeve shirt on, sitting at sunburned. But yeah, quad biking in the desert. That was pretty cool. As part of the evening show warm-up, the cruise director would often say, he'd have a list of things that are like stupid things that passengers say, but other passengers, obviously you guys aren't that stupid. Things like, oh, did the crew sleep on board? No, we helicopter them in. And what do you do about power? Oh, we have a big power cable that we loop out the back that's still attached to Southampton. But some of the complaints were just shocking. He read out a few, and I can't remember many, but complaints about the Africa cruise, people saying, oh, it's too hot. And well, it is Africa, and they complain about some of the facilities in the local stops. Like, well, it is what it is. And one of the ones he couldn't repeat in the show, but he told us in private after, he said, we had a complaint about a cruise to Africa. Too many flies, too many blacks.
What the fuck?
I don't know what you'd say to a person with that mindset. Maybe you should go on holiday in Oxford instead and stop being really racist. But overall, had some great times. It's a lot of fun. Some good stuff, some bad stuff, but I got to travel some really cool places as well. And because the ship was quite small, it got into some different places that most ships wouldn't get to. We got to Ascension Island, although it was too rough for people to get off the boat. But we got to St. Helena, which was Napoleon's final resting place, and that was crazy. And I was standing there thinking, I'm only here because I'm playing bass. But I finally got to travel somewhere with music, and it was amazing. There was a big bougainvillea, big purple plant, where he'd chosen for his resting place. And it's quite sobering to think that this is a man who'd commanded armies across an empire, and then he was imprisoned on this island, and he wasn't under house arrest because it's just an island. Like, where's he going to go? What's he going to do? But just imagine the contrast of that. And then we actually went to his house, and he wasn't alone. There was some staff there, and we saw his bed, like the bed he died in. And it was much shorter than you imagine, not just because he's a midget, because he wasn't. He was apparently average height for the time. But a lot of people had respiratory conditions at that time, so they'd sleep in a more sitting up position. So just there thinking like, wow, this is nuts. There's Napoleon's bed, and having him, the idea of him walking around the island was like, where shall I be buried? That's just crazy. But some amazing experiences, and glad I did that. It led on to some other work, and I'll be telling some more stories about that. But this was just in a 3-month stint. So, yeah, some good times. Cheers, Saga. Thanks for listening. Check out more information on mattsimonguitar.com and do check out my app, Guitar Secrets, available on Google and Apple App Stores. Cheers.